we understood we were required to submit. We're still waiting for a form.
People of Cayucas are also trying to update their area plan. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay.
I have nothing further at this time.
Great.
Thank you.
Any Planning Commission comments?
Right. I'd like to say I attended the Planning Commissioner's training conference that was hosted last Saturday, and I enjoyed it. It was very informative. Certainly got a lot of informational packets that I haven't completed reading yet.
I also attended, and I think staff did an excellent job of all the cities and also county staff in organizing that and putting it together.
And I also wanted to thank county staff for the effort that obviously went into that. It was a very well-planned and incredibly informative afternoon. I learned a lot. It was really beneficial for me and our deliberations that we have on this commission going forward. So thanks. And if you ever wonder about whether we get any value out of that, the answer is a resounding yes.
I want to second all those comments. And do you plan to do it maybe annually?
That is the plan, and I'll sit here and take receive all the compliments, but I can't really take all the credit. I think the credit really goes to Pat Beck, our assistant planning director, and Rob Strong, the community development director of Arroyo Grande, for really spearheading the conference. I was just happy to help set up and take down, but it's nice to hear your comments, and I do agree. I was actually acting as sort of, I guess you could call a double agent, because I'm a member of an advisory group or committee in the city of Arroyo Grande. So I was wearing two hats that day. And so I can identify with what your commission's saying. I found it was very valuable. Even though I've been in the game a long time, I was hearing things that I hadn't heard before either. And Pat told me the plan is to do these annually.
Any other Planning Commission comments at this point? Okay, seeing none, we'll go on to our consent agenda. Commission, like to remove the item, or do we have a motion to accept the consent agenda?
Move to accept the consent agenda.
Okay, I have a motion, second. Any discussion? No discussion. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Okay, item passes. We now go on to our first hearing item. Lona, could you please introduce the first item?
First item is a continued hearing to consider a request by Mark Godfrey for a vesting tentative tract map to subdivide an existing 19.2-acre parcel into seven parcels of between 3.15 and 2.5 acres each for sale and or development. Residential suburban land use category, San Luis Bay Inland Planning Area, county file number S030062T, Track 2574, Supervisorial District 4, Brian Pedrotti, Project Manager.
Okay, Brian.
Per the memo before you, staff has requested that the item be continued. The memo requests a continuance to May 12, 2005. Staff is requesting an additional continuance at a minimum of 60 days. To allow the environmental reports have been reviewed, but have been sent back to the applicant for some revisions. And so staff will need the additional time to probably re-review those reports. And so I guess we recommend continuance to the June 9th, 2005 meeting.
To June 9th? I have a number of people that would like to speak on this item, so I do want to make that comment. Commission, have any questions of staff?
Will that be on calendar or off calendar?
If you continue it to June 9th, that would be on calendar.
Okay.
You could also continue it off calendar if you feel that's appropriate.
I'd like to, pardon me, I'd like to make one just quick observation. I see some pretty strong similarities between this project and the other project that's before us. After this project, the A.G. Edwards subdivision request, and I would just like to bring up the issue of perhaps as you continue to review this application, you might take another look at the question of cumulative impact, since it's pretty apparent that there's a lot of this type of subdivision activity going on in the area. Cumulative impact seems like a growing concern.
Any other questions to staff? Okay. Seeing none, I'll open the public hearing and ask the applicant that you'd like to come forward. The applicant would like to come forward and make any comments? The applicant would not like to come forward and make it. There's a number of people that would like to speak on this item. But we still have a number of people that have requested to speak on this item. I have a number of requests to speak forms. And so you're welcome to come forward. Do you agree to the continuance? Could you come forward at least and state whether you agree with the continuance? State your name. And
time something was done that asked me what I thought, if I against this, report that, or would I want these trees planted here? Or, you know, and I've had pretty much my own voice in it. So I'm just here more or less not because I want to be a bunch of houses around mine, but that I'm not. As a property owner adjacent to the subdivision, I'm not against it. Thank you.
I believe we have a question for you, Mr. Smith.
Thanks for coming down, Mr. Smith. Appreciate you taking the time. Can I just ask the size of your parcel adjacent?
2.5 acres.
2.5 acres, so it's down to its minimum parcel size already?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Carolyn Underwood?
Can I speak here?
Yes.
I'm a little bit nervous, so I wrote this out. Anyway, my name is Carolyn, better known as Casey Underwood. Roger and I live at the end of Fox Canyon Lane, which is not adjacent to the Godfrey development. We bought one of the original lots that Mr. Godfrey and his father developed. However, it was a resale. Anyway, before we built our home, there was an almost level building site, and everything else on the property was in a natural state. The only bulldozing we had to do was putting in our front driveway down a hill and also making room for our garage. These two actions brought us problems later on when it rained heavily. We had to regrade our long driveway 3 times due to mudslides and ruts. Midway during the construction, our builder had to put in a drainage ditch and catch basin at the bottom corner of our property because after torrential rain, mud went down all the way to the Woolworths and the Wilsons' property, which is way, way down. We wanted to keep the ditch and catch basin for a year after we moved into our home, but the county made us grade it back to its natural state. We planted the rest of the property in ryegrass temporarily to hold the dirt before we did any landscaping. Since that time, we have planted mainly California native plants and trees in a small fruit orchard. The native ferns that have come back in front have been beautiful. My point is, of all of this, is we moved here in the country from the Bay Area for the peace and quiet and the natural beauty. We empathize with our neighbors who live next to the new Godfrey development. My suggestion is for all of us concerned and for the sake of the environment that Mr. Godfrey downscale the size of his lots, which would mean fewer lots. By doing this, he could make sure there is a suitable building site on each lot with no bulldozing whatsoever, which would disturb the environment. My understanding is that Rob Strong from Aurora Grande recommended that the lot size be 5 acres to prevent erosion. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Okay. Susan Patton and then Craig Harvey.
Good morning. I'm Susan Patton. I live on Bee Canyon, and we do adjoin the potential development area. I'd request that we get a complete EIR on the development before any more bulldozing is done or anything else. The negative declaration was based on insufficient data. I know you've already asked for more, but I think a full EIR is preferable. The wetland and the geology need complete investigation. And I raised the question of possible vernal pool in the quarry area. And samples on a vernal pool should probably be taken during the wet season. And some vernal pools do have tiny but very important species. I go along with the postponement, particularly because we, as the public, haven't seen the new documents that have been brought in. And because the agenda said it would be continued, quite a few of our neighbors who object did not come today. The zoning of that area in general seems to be improper, as Rob Strong seems to mention in the document that you have from him. It's not suburban residential, it's rural. and it's a mix of ag and residential. You can look back at the document from Rob Strong on that. He objects to the zoning and density. He has concerns for the adequacy of additional fire protection and notes that the local roads are already impacted and probably shouldn't have more building until something's done on that score. We, as the neighborhood, would like to see the area preserved. Most lots in the area are 3+ acres, not 2.5 or smaller. Most of the homes in the immediate area are somewhat rustic, ranch-style homes. We do have a few big, what I'd call mansions. They are, I hate to say eyesores, because they're nice homes, but they just don't fit with the area. Large multi-story homes with
Badger Canyon will do to that area. Thank you.
Any questions? Lou Ferrigno, please.
Good morning. I've been around the world 3 times, and I'm in the film business, and apparently I've traveled, seen many different locations, and there's no place like where we live now. Most people take it for granted, because I live on 1075 Fox Canyon, and mainly one of the reasons why I love living here and living there is because of the environment, the beautiful oak tree, the peat, the quiet. And I hate to see our neighborhood destroyed. Irrigation, all these problems with the environment, I mean, the land, the environment, because we have so little left, we need to protect our environment. That's why I'm here supporting my neighbors, because it's really upsetting to me, because this is something that I look for when I come from down south to come up here, because the way it's structured now, you appreciate the beauty, all these oak trees, and especially the air. And, you know, you can go any other place, but it's nothing like this place. I really have a strong belief and strong support, and I really want to see this stop. I really want to see something be done, how we can preserve our environment and neighborhood. Thank you very much.
Any questions? No questions. I have no other requests to speak. Forms, is there anybody else that would like to speak in this item? Please come forward. Okay, seeing no one else, would the applicant like to come forward to make any closing remarks? No? Okay, we'll close the public hearing and bring it back to the Planning Commission for any closing remarks or a decision.
I just have a question for Mr. Pedrotti. Craig Harvey mentioned that there was some nearby property owners that hadn't been contacted about this project. Was that within the area that we need to notice neighbors directly? Do we need to take another look at our noticing?
We normally noticed within everybody within 300 feet, all the owners within 300 feet. We can take a look at the list, but we get the list from the county clerk's office from the latest ownership records.
So the owner of the horse pasture that Mr. Harvey mentioned may or may not be within 300 feet, but if he's interested in the proceedings, he could ask to be added to that, to
certainly
the list of notices.
Certainly, yes.
Maybe, Mr. Harvey, you can pass that along to your neighbor, and he can get on the list if he's not within the 300-foot limit.
I'll talk to the neighbor and make sure that gets done.
Okay, very good. Any other comments by the Planning Commission? If not, we have a staff recommendation to continue this to June 9, 2005. Do we have a motion?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
We've actually looked at the agenda for that date, and it's rather full. There's more time on the 23rd, and so we'd actually like to change our recommendation to the 23rd.
June 23rd? Mm-hmm. I'll ask the applicant if there's... Make sure the applicant is aware of that.
There's no problem with that.
Okay, the applicant has no problem with continuing to June 23rd. So we have a motion by the commission.
I'll so move.
Okay, I have a first. Do I have a second?
Second.
Okay, any discussion? No discussion. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Okay, motion carries. Move on to our second item. Lona, could you please introduce the second item? Thank you, everybody, for attending.
Item 2 is a hearing to consider a request by Carpenter Canyon Estates Engineering Development Associates for a vesting tentative tract map to subdivide an existing 27.4-acre parcel into 9 parcels of between 2.5 and 4.2 acres each for sale and or development. This project includes off-site road improvements to Highway 227. residential suburban land use category, San Luis Bay inland planning area, supervisorial district 4, county file number S020346T, track 2542, Stephanie Fuse, project manager.
Good morning, Chairperson, members of the Commission, Stephanie Fuse, County Planning. As was stated, this is a vesting tentative tract map to subdivide a 27-acre parcel into 9 parcels ranging in size from 2.5 to 4 acres each. The project is located on Carpenter Canyon Road, otherwise known as Highway 227, just north of the city of Arroyo Grande. The project is in the residential suburban land use category. This project was originally submitted as a 10-lot tract in April of 2003. We found that the impacts to vegetation were too significant and asked the applicant to redesign the project. From the slides, the aerial, you can see that there is a lot of vegetation, but there are a lot of open areas as well. The next slide shows a view of the site from basically the city limits of Arroyo Grande looking north on Highway 227. And the next slide shows a view from Royal Oak Way, the northern portion of the site looking west. The other issue with this is that it's fairly steep, over 20% in many locations. Approval staff provided the commission with some proposed changes. I'll outline them briefly. Conditions 12 and 13 would add the word new at the beginning of each sentence. Condition 19 would change, instead of a homeowners association, it would be held in single ownership.
Yeah. Excuse me, Stephanie, the changes that you're proposing, did you hand those out this morning?
They were in a memo that were emailed to you, and I would have to defer to the clerk.
Okay.
But they were in an email, and they were in our boxes up in the...
Okay.
I apologize if there was any confusion on that end.
Okay, which page are you... Could you go through the page in the staff report as you go through the changes?
2-6 for conditions 12 and 13.
Okay, thank you.
And then 2-7 for condition 19, where we would be changing the homeowners association to single ownership and adding lot 8 to the lots that could have leach lines included in the open space easement area. And then 221, which is condition 36 double L, which would also add parcel 8. And then, conditions 21, which is on 28, 27B, which is on 29, 35W, which is on 213, and 36X, which is on... finding it 226, which changes the reference from 6-inch trees to 5-inch trees. And with those proposed changes, staff is recommending approval of the map based on the findings in Exhibit A and the conditions in Exhibit B, and that the commission adopt the negative declaration for the project.
Okay, thank you. Any questions for staff?
Yes, I do. On page 29, number 27, first paragraph, the end of the first paragraph, you say, or hand removal of weeds covering at least 3 feet radius from the center plant and shall be completed for each new plant. This hand removal of weeding shall be kept up on a regular basis. I want to point out that OSHA, which is the California Occupational Safety and Health Standard Board, on March 17th at their meeting, just put new regulations on hand weeding. Now, I know OSHA is for the safety of employees with employers, but I think all government agencies should speak the same language. Here we're saying hand weeding, and they talk about hand weeding, and what they've done is they've made it illegal for the employer to require that weeding be done either in a stooped, kneeling or squatting position. Now, they still allow standing or sitting hand weeding. Standing, of course, would be with a long-handled hoe. Sitting would be in a sitting position, which would only work on a raised bed or something that's higher than ground level, unless you've got extra long arms. So I'm wondering if there might be confusion here with hand weeding going against what OSHA has just enacted in its March 17th meeting. I know it's a minor point, but you have this in several places in this on page 29, 217, 225. I'm wondering if we could say maybe hand hoeing of weeds, signifying that it can be done in the standing position, which I assume it can. Now, they allow hand hoeing as long as you don't stoop over more than 20% of the time to pull weeds around the plant or so. That's one exception they have. And the good side of this is they allow you a 15-minute break instead of 10 minutes every 4 hours. So I just wanted to bring that out so that it doesn't look like we're going against what OSHA is requiring of employers to do for the employees.
Madam Chair, if I might offer a comment on Commissioner Milskow's comment. Maybe the easiest thing to do would be wherever there's a reference in the various conditions to hand removal of weeds, we could just simply add the words consistent with OSHA regulations.
Okay.
I don't know if staff had already started working on that or not, but something like that I think would work.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Rather than getting into hand hoeing and percentage of time you can stoop or not,
how many
breaks you take.
Thank
okay.
you. That's a suggestion.
Any other questions of staff?
Well, yeah, I got a few.
Okay.
Starting on page 2-4, the finding G. I think our word processor has caught up with us there. The design of the subdivision of the proposed improvements will not cause substantial environmental damage or substantially. There's one on page 223, which is the same as 2197. And
yeah, it's the 2197.
Okay, so how does that? Okay, this is a plan, but how does it get done? I didn't see a condition in here saying, "Amen, amen, I say unto you, do your mitigation plan." And it's defined as the Althaus and Mead Incorporated report, or I don't know however would legally define the thing. And if that's, maybe somebody needs to look at that, I'll go to a couple other questions. I think the next one's going to be for Richard while you're thinking about that one. I'm on page 249. And there's a letter from Mr. Clark, and on the second page, the first complete paragraph, if the underlying geology is what we suspect, the percolation test water may quickly filter through, et cetera, et cetera. In other words, he's questioning the whether, in fact, the septic systems are going to work, and he's concerned that the effluent is going to daylight on his property. How is this going to be... How do we know this is not going to be a problem?
Richard Marshall, Department of Public Works. Actually, that's a thing that the Department of Environmental Health will be knowledgeable of, and they'll be the ones checking. I'm sorry, I'm not able. It's not my expertise.
But engineering and septic tanks.
No, sorry.
But he's alleging that the geology is not good.
Right.
So maybe someone else could answer. And generally, how do we make sure it is good before the septic tank goes in the ground? I see John McKenzie kind of easing towards the microphone.
Thank you, Commissioner Ruth. John McKenzie, Environmental Division. I'll take a stab at it. Prior to recordation of any map, adequate percolation information is required before a lot can be created, and that will need to be done as a part of this project. There are limitations, or potential limitations, as you're indicating, shallow depth to bedrock would be a major one. There are means to overcome that. Engineering systems can be accomplished. Seepage pits are a means to do that when you do have shallow depth to bedrock.
Well, I had a little experience with that to get your lot split. You got to do this thing, and they drill a hole, they throw some water in it, and it goes down at a certain rate. But if what Mr. Clark alleges is the case, the water will go down, and they don't put that much water into that test boring. It'll go down and show up at his property a week later. Of course, by that time, the thing is all signed off and we're done. How will this problem be evaluated?
Well, that's something that when Environmental Health does review the information provided on percolation, that, you know, they do look at if it's a fractured bedrock situation and if additional measures are needed or if it... So it is something that is looked at in some detail prior to recordation before that lot can be created.
Okay.
Commissioner Rose, I wanted to follow up on that because I had the same question and concern. And I looked at the initial study on page 297 where it addresses wastewater. And when I read that section, it appeared to be very generic and was not site-specific. And as a matter of fact, it would just talked about this is typically what you do in a very generic sense. And it wasn't, I didn't think it was specific to the site. And typically when you address a site, you'll say specifically in this site, here are the characteristics of the soil. Here are the characteristics, and you know we've done a soils analysis, or we've done a geologic report, and we feel that the soils can accommodate a septic system. When I've read this, and John, correct me if I'm wrong, but when I read this and I looked at it, and in light of the letter from Mr. Clark, because I had the same questions you had, Commissioner Rose, I felt that I was unclear whether septic systems would work on that site. And in light of that, I thought, well, I'll go to the initial study and see if we've done something, because we need to address whether there's a potential for a septic failure and whether that's an environmental issue. And we can't condition it to say, gee, we'll study it later. And if there's, you know, if we find out later on there's a septic failure, then we'll go ahead and put mitigation measures later, because we can't do that legally. And I looked at it and I felt, gee, it seems like we're missing something at this point. And maybe we should have county geologists.
It talks about that general area where this is being proposed, and it talks about that inadequate drainage in the area has resulted in localized flooding and siltation of drainage courses. Most of the fringe area lies over non-water-bearing geology, and some of the steeper slopes and poorer soils may also require extensive systems in order to provide adequate treatment capabilities. So my question was, why? I actually have two questions. Why didn't the county geologist take a look at this site? And number two, has Environmental Health ever, I mean, if we went down this path of approving this project and information came back that, the area was not particularly well suited to septic systems, has Environmental Health ever then denied that the project go forward, or is it just a question of additional engineering?
Environmental Health was sent a referral and did respond to the project, and they did include a few measures that we commonly see, you know, as more engineering kind of comments, that they didn't identify that it wasn't developable or couldn't support on-site systems at this, you know, with the information they had. They had sufficient, you know, it's kind of their preliminary letter saying, based on preliminary information, we have enough information to say that on-site system for wells and septics are supportable, but some additional information is required at the tail end of the process.
But has that information that is obtained at the tail end of the process ever resulted in a denial of a permit, to your knowledge?
I'm not aware of that happening. However, just to reiterate, just if they cannot prove out sufficient water or adequate percolation or an acceptable means to install an on-site wastewater system, that lot cannot be created, and therefore you will not have a residence. So it's the mitigation is fairly the mitigation is that you just cannot develop, you know. And so just to make sure
my point is that applicants can frequently hire you know, professionals that will, in their professional opinion, says everything's good to go. But that's why the county has a county geologist on staff now, which is a wonderful resource for staff to use, because that profession, that individual can give his professional opinion that's sort of, you know, independent from who's hiring, because he works for the public. So I guess I'm just encouraging county staff to make good use of his time, particularly in situations like this where you've got some questionable geology that actually goes all the way back to the original area plan, as well as the site-specific information.
And, John, I just had some additional questions on page 297 of the initial study on wastewater. Again, when I read this, it didn't appear that this was necessarily site-specific. It was fairly generic when I read through this, that it was just in general, this is what the basin plan says you have to do, and this is there some way to possibly in initial studies to make it more site-specific, so we talk about this particular site has the following soil characteristics and this is what needs to be done? And so, you know, I'm just hoping that maybe just, this is my preference, just make it tailored more to the particular site.
We would certainly be happy to embellish further.
Okay.
I would agree with that, especially since the area plan alerts one to those
right.
difficulties. A couple more questions. I know this one's going to be for Richard here. I'm on page 256, another letter from Mr. Clark dated July 21st, 2004. And on the second page of his letter, which is on 256, he's talking about 227. There's a five-foot shoulder used by joggers and walkers, and a relocation in the pavement edge will eliminate this walkway. Could you describe, is this going to be a problem, or did he misunderstand something, or...?
Richard Marshall, Department of Public Works. I wouldn't say that he misunderstood something as much as simply didn't have all the information available. The widening of the road to create the extra pavement area for the intersection design will also include widening the road bed so that the shoulder is maintained outside of the widened pavement. So it'll simply, the whole thing will be moved over. It'll still be available.
So the joggers will still have a place. Good.
That's right.
Okay, one last question. I think this is for Mr. McKenzie. There was a... somebody alerted me to some new state law which changed... It's an Oak... the Oak Woodlands Group sent me this. And it changed 21083.4. And it talked about the mitigation one must do if you're... in articulate term, messing with oak woodlands, and you have to do like the county already does. You have to replace the trees at a certain ratio.
Just to 5 inches, as was already mentioned, that change has been made in the standard. We did look at, in this particular case, if there were any additional trees as a result of reducing that diameter down. In this case, there are no additional trees above what has already been stated for being impacted or removed. Another component of this is the length of time that projects are monitored. Currently, we typically use a three-year program, and that was established based on biologist botanists that we've used in the past, and it was their professional opinion that 3 years was an adequate time to establish vegetation. In this case, the bill is the COOL bill is the name. It's SB 1334, and it's Oak Woodland Management Plan is the name. But this bill includes a component to increase that monitoring time to a 7-year period. This project is proposing a 5-year, so it is a couple of years short of that bill. So if your planning commission feels it's appropriate, it certainly could be amended to a 7-year monitoring period.
It doesn't matter what we think. It's what state law is, isn't it?
Yes. But again, we're working on getting our measures revised. It's Okay, yeah, that's correct. Lastly, I think the bill includes a provision about the planting of oak trees as only being allowed to account for up to half of the mitigation. In this case, they are proposing an open space area that is protecting a substantial portion of the oaks that are on the property, and that would fulfill the conservation easement that is referenced in this legislation. So that would fulfill the other half of the mitigation that would be required. So essentially they're mostly meeting the intent of the bill and the provisions of the bill.
If okay. I can tag on to John, this is a vesting tentative map. It was accepted in October 28th of 2003, which freezes the rules in effect as of that day. And so we took a look at this relative to the new bill, and we feel it meets, for the most part, the intent of the bill. Your commission does have discretion, and you can change that monitoring period from 5 to 7 years if you so desire. The numbers of the trees doesn't change relative to from 5 inches to 6 inches. And the open space, both the open space easement and the open space on the parcel, are the other mitigation measures used to address the oak trees.
I have no idea how you're going to determine what half of the monitoring is. Like in this case, they required, I think you're 55 oaks, so okay, half, and so now the other half means, I have no idea what that means. I guess I'll leave it at that.
I just...
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
I have a number of questions, but since we're talking about SB 1334, I'm looking quickly at the language, and I don't see where... I mean, what staff represented was that the portions of the property where the oak trees will be remaining, i.e. the undeveloped areas that will be subject to the conservation easement, constitutes the other half of the mitigation that's required by the new state law. But I don't see where just not cutting down trees that are not in the way of development anyway constitutes half of the mitigation under this bill. And like I say, I'm kind of reading it on the fly, but I just don't see that as one of the options. That the options are contribute funds to the Oak Woodland Conservation Fund or other mitigation measures developed by the county. You're exempt if you have an oak tree preservation plan in your general plan or if the project is part of an NCCP. Or if it's an agricultural project, but I just don't see that in the bill. So I think this project has to comply with state law, and I don't see how we can go forward without doing that. But that being said, the changes that were suggested, the amendments that were suggested, delete the requirement that the homeowners association hold the conservation easement. I'm just wondering why. I mean, do we have any idea who then will hold the conservation easement if the homeowners association isn't going to, and why was that changed?
It was the applicant's request that we don't create a homeowners association, and so I believe the subdivider will hold it until each individual lot owner gains title of each lot.
And then, but who will hold the conservation easement ultimately?
Well, the county holds the conservation easement.
County will base easement and not a conservation easement.
And there is a significant
difference between the two. Is that correct? Maybe we need to clarify that.
There is a difference between the two. We don't have the authority to require a conservation easement as a condition of a permit. That's a specific provision in the civil code section, but we do use open space easements to do that. And if there's some particular thing that you want included in the open space easement, if you put it in the condition, when it comes time to record the map, there's got to be substantial conformance with the condition of approval. And when I prepare the easement, I pick out the additional requirements from the condition, put it in the easement.
Are we specifically prohibited from requiring a conservation easement as opposed to an open space easement?
Yes.
We are prohibited.
Yes.
Well, in that case, I think it would be appropriate, rather than list everything we'd like to see included in it today, have a condition added that the open space easement comes back to this commission for review before the county accepts it, because as we are learning in all too frequent cases, open space easements are not created equal, and their enforceability really depends on the individual language that is in the document itself. So I'd like to have an opportunity to review that before the county accepts it.
Just to weigh in, I would not. I'd rather the legal guys took care of that. I would like for us to put the conditions in. Need to do A, B, and C, and let county council's office do that.
And then what happens after that? It goes to the board of supervisors on the consent agenda along with the final map. Any agreement that's required is approval of the tentative map goes along with the final map.
Okay. Mr. Orton, are the open space easement agreements typically identical on projects?
Yes, but I've got a number of different ones that varies, you know, whether it's sometimes you're protecting special plant habitat, sometimes you got kit fox protections, sometimes it's required as part of a cluster division that has particular requirements from the ordinance that are in that, and then other times additional prohibitions are added by the review authority when it approves a tentative map or development plan. So there are a number of variations to it.
Madam Chair, on page 2-7, condition 19, there are additional provisions that staff is recommending that your commission adopt as part of the open space easement.
And I noted that, but it's extremely important how those conditions are actually worded in the easement. That's the enforceable document. I'm not prepared today to go through everything that needs to be included in that easement, and I'm certainly not prepared to suggest, you know, specific language, nor do I think it's necessarily our place to do that. That's what county council's for. But I just think it's a reasonable it's reasonable to request an additional level of review for that open space easement, because that's going to be the enforceable mechanism that the county is going to use to ensure that that area is protected in perpetuity. And I think it deserves review by this commission.
Well, let me find out if there's interest on the commission. Any other commissioners would like to see the document come back?
No, I would rather not.
Okay.
No, I would rather not.
Okay, so it doesn't appear that there's interest.
Okay, so
maybe it would be helpful if I came back at a future time at a study session and brought you samples of the forms we've been using and sort of explain so you can get a better idea of what that end of it looks like when I prepare the agreement and then when it goes on to the board. Maybe that would be helpful.
That would be helpful, and I just want to make it clear for the record that the majority of this commission is not interested in reviewing detail of conservation easements that are required to protect natural resources in the county. So with that, I'll go on with my questions. Again, Commissioner Rose brought up the fact that we hadn't completed the findings for impacts to wildlife habitat in condition G on, I think it's page 2-4. And I think one of the reasons that perhaps that wasn't done is that I didn't see any wildlife studies in the document. There was a botanical study that was done, but I didn't see that there was any surveys, specific surveys that were done for wildlife species on the site. There was a passing comment that there wasn't any red-legged frog habitat, but I didn't see that that was the result of any concerted survey to find red-legged frog habitat. And there is, in fact, a wetland on the property that had other native frog tadpoles in it when there was some cursory review. So I don't know how we could make those findings today, even if staff came up with some concluding remarks about it. I don't know how you could draw those conclusions. So likelihood that the NDDB would have, you know, species sightings specifically on that, you know, that APN number is fairly remote. I'm not comfortable writing off that there is no wildlife on that property that, you know, would be impacted or would need a wildlife corridor without any
surveys to support that. I don't know that we can make those findings.
In this case also, they are protecting a substantial portion of the site that does have the oak woodland habitat. If you look at the figure up on the screen, the areas both in the, I guess, the light blue and dark blue are intended to be, the light blue would be, is protected with no additional impacts to the habitat. The blues are kind of restricted areas with a similar intent. So a substantial area is provided. There are corridors, if you will. In this case, there wasn't. You know, when we look for corridors, we're looking at, you know, possibly between two water bodies or a food source to a water source are kind of common things for wildlife corridors. In this case, I mean, there is corridors remaining throughout the property that can get them through the property without having to be interfered with.
Okay, that looks to the unpracticed eye like perhaps just spaces between the houses. I don't know that that qualifies as a wildlife corridor, particularly when you've got the disruption of the roads as well. I think what the neighbors were suggesting was a ridgeline corridor that would require the houses moved further down the hillside. I mean, that I don't see a wildlife corridor there. I don't see what's being connected to the surrounding contiguous habitat. It just looks like you've got some spaces between the houses that you're letting the trees stay between the roads and the houses. So I don't think that really can qualify as a wildlife corridor. But that's just my opinion.
You said there's a surface water body there? The negative deck says there is not. Did you say there is a wetland
there?
Yeah,
there is, actually. Let's see. I can find it in my... The Althaus report said that there was a wetland. It's on page 2163. It said in 2003 there was a wetland observed with Pacific chorus frog tadpoles in it, but that modifications to the road bank in the summer of 2003 eliminated the standing water, and there's still some wetland vegetation there, which actually leads me to my next question. Did the applicant go in and bulldoze his wetland under the guise of road improvements? Was there a permit for that grading that eliminated that wetland in the summer of 2003?
I'm not aware of that.
Can we find out if that ever happened or if we've got an outstanding violation on the property that hasn't been addressed?
There's no outstanding violation on the property, and perhaps when the applicant speaks, they can answer a lot of your commission's questions.
So, do you, Ms. Griffin, do you know that there we have a permit on file for the grading that was done for that?
I don't know that there is a permit on file, but I know there's not an active violation on this property.
I didn't say an active violation. I said an outstanding violation. So if there was grading of a wetland without a permit, wouldn't that be a violation of...
If it was turned in and our code enforcement officers acted on it. However, we don't have any of that information that anything was ever submitted as a violation or that there was an enforcement case ever opened on this property.
But we do have evidence in the Althaus report that there was a wetland there prior to 2003. There was road work done, and now the wetland is gone. So
the road work done on Carpenter Canyon perhaps was done by the county, and maybe Richard knows about that.
Maybe Caltrans.
Or Caltrans.
My expression indicates I don't know anything about that.
Okay. Okay. Well, that might be something we could get some additional information on. I have some comments on cumulative impacts, but I'll let some other commissioners speak, and we'll hear from the public, and maybe we can have a little further discussion. Thank you.
Any other questions for staff before we open the public hearing?
Yes, I had one. On page 2-34, the correspondence from the City of Arroyo Grande recommending city fire and traffic impact fees be paid. I just wonder if you had any comments on that.
The way we handle cumulative issues, in this case for fire, We do have a public facility fee that would be, and that basically is paid to our CDF primarily. We don't pay into cities for it's going to require a lot of on-site recommendations that deals with water, signage, setbacks from flammable vegetation, those kinds of things, addressing, as well as paying into a public facility fee, which addresses the cumulative effects.
Mm-hmm. All right, thank you.
Back to the traffic. Quite often, I know the city of Paso Robles asked for that nearby applicants pay into their mitigation plan, but I thought the whole logic behind these traffic fees was that each incremental step change, one little house pays their small portion, although in some cases not very small, but they pay their portion of whatever improvements are going to be required to support development. So I buy your logic with the fire fees, but the traffic fees might make sense. But I wonder if Richard has an opinion on that.
We have seen both treatments used. There have been a small number of projects in the unincorporated area where their proximity and their impact to city facilities have led to us requiring that they pay the nearby city's traffic mitigation fees, but there's quite a few others where that's not the case, and we haven't converted it into a standing policy that all things, that it's a uniform thing. It's really dependent upon the analysis. We haven't identified that there's a project-specific impact here, and I don't know enough about the details of the city's analysis, how much impact to their facilities they forecast came from surrounding unincorporated area development. But if your commission is interested, we can help you formulate condition language that implements that requirement.
Any other questions? Okay. Cammie and Stephanie, I have a question. Apparently, there was a memorandum of understanding between the city of Arroyo Grande and the county that was entered into in December 2002, and it was with the county and the city, and there were certain agreements, apparently, on what would happen with development in the county. And I was just wondering whether this project meets those agreed-to standards. Are you aware of the MOU that was entered into between the city and the county? I have a copy of it. It was just handed to me. I hadn't seen it before.
No, staff is not aware of any MOU or MOA.
Okay. Tell you what, you know, we're about to our break time, so maybe we can take a 15-minute break before we open the public hearing, and I can give this to you. Maybe you can look at it real quickly. So why don't we take a 15-minute break, and we'll be back at about 10 after 10, and then open the public hearing. This will give staff an opportunity to look at it.
Information page. Under Links, click on Maps, Planning and Zoning.